Hey guys, welcome to a brand new episode of Yolitics here. One thing we wanted to come on this episode with is here, we are now less than 100 days until the November election. So you're really going to see campaigns kicking high gear.
Can I stop you right there? Do you think it got here fast?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I mean, we're like, what, 94 days?
So you have just admitted that I was correct in one of our prior episodes. I don't know if you remember this.
I don't remember, but go ahead.
It wasn't that long ago that I was saying, man, it's right around the corner. You're like, just around the corner? What are you talking about? We still have this many months. What? And I go, it is going to get here so fast
that
we're going to be there.
I'm not conceding that you were right. I'm just saying we're getting close to it. So that's what it's
And you said
it
got here fast, and it did. And election night's going to get here super fast. Yeah. And we're already seeing, we've got some legit races happening here in Texas. A lot of times, they don't seem that competitive. This time around, we've got some horse races.
It really seems like that. You know, everyone talks about the biggest race on the ballot, Paxton, Tallarico, the U.S. Senate race. People may not realize that's going to impact these down ballot races.
Everything else gets touched.
Yeah, there was a poll the other day. We'll talk about the polls in just a moment because I'm sure people know all about these polls. But one of the polls showed Gina Hinojosa running for governor, 1 point behind Greg Abbott, the incumbent.
We hadn't seen that.
I don't remember in 30 years when we've seen something like that. Now, it's probably going to turn out like that, but still, the reason it's polling like that, a lot of people say, well, it's the Tallarico effect.
Mm-hmm.
Beto had the same effect, too, in 2018.
And people are getting plugged in now. Some of those early polls, you see these yawning gaps between these different candidates for different races. But you do start to typically see things tighten some as we start to get close to Election Day because people are starting to check in. They're starting to pay attention. And that's why we're about to see the flood of ads because these campaigns know that.
What Labor Day is traditionally when everything kicks off here, but in the last week, we've seen two polls, two pretty significant polls out here. The first one was done by Texas Public Opinion Research. Luke Warford runs it. He's a former Democratic Party official for the state. People write that one off. That poll showed that Tallarico's ahead by five. That got a lot of attention. They interviewed 1,000 people, likely voters. It's a good sampling. But then fast forward to Friday morning.
This one got paid a lot more attention to here in Texas, I think.
Fox News releases a poll
that
shows Tallarico ahead by three.
And Gina Hinojosa behind by one. That was
behind
that poll, right?
By one point. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, we're 90-something days away, but Tallarico being ahead by that doesn't give Paxton a lot of time to turn things around. Mm-hmm. This is still Paxton's race to lose.
Right.
At the end of the day. Regardless of what's going on here, this is still a Republican state. There are still more Republican voters than there are Democratic voters in this state.
But you have those independents, and what do the independents do?
They usually lean to the right, but not necessarily now.
And are people on the right, are they energized to vote this time? Are people on the left energized to vote? Who has more energy going into Election Day is going to matter.
One of the crosstabs in the Fox News poll on Friday showed that Tallarico has 68% of the independents.
That's a big number.
He has two-thirds of the independents. Independents in the state generally have always leaned to the right. Mm-hmm. They're still independent. They lean to the right. But the fact that Tallarico has 68% of two-thirds of them, wow, that is significant. This is going to mean Greg Abbott's likely going to have to spend a little bit more of his money than he may have been anticipating to spend. We'll also see a lot of outside money come into this as well.
Greg Abbott's got plenty of money to spend,
though,
too.
He has a lot of money.
But as you mentioned, this, and where will that money get spent? Because it's not just those big races at the top. As you mentioned, every one of those races beneath that one, beneath those, get shaken as well because you've got people who will go in and go, I'm just going to go down the ballot here.
Yeah. And in a few minutes in this episode here, you're going to hear from Christina Morales. She's a Democratic state rep from Houston. She represents the 2nd Ward just there on the north side of downtown, but she also is leading the Democrats' re-election efforts in the House of Representatives. And Democrats in this state think that because of Tallarico and his popularity and his fundraising ability on the top of the ballot, they think that that might be able to swing in a majority for them. They need to win 14 seats to win a majority. Now, before you say there's no way, in 2018 when Beto was on the ballot, they got 12 seats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was a little different dynamic then, but they still think that it's certainly possible.
That would be an extraordinary change in Texas.
Again, there are more Republican voters here at the end of the day. Can Democrats do it? I guess technically they could do it. Will we see a sea change like that? I'm not going to say what they say in every election, the blue wave. I'm just not going to say it. Now, I may get proven wrong November the 3rd, and if I do, then I want you to come out and tell me I was totally wrong about
this. I'm always
this.
Happy to do that.
I know, yeah. You're not making a statement like that, so I can tell. So we're going to hear from Christina Morales in a moment. But first, I want you to hear from Shelley Luther, state rep from Grayson County, from Sherman. She represents the northern part of the Red River area. And she was able to successfully, I don't remember this happening before, to get Greg Abbott, the governor, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Ken Paxton, Nate Sheets, who's running for agriculture commissioner, all the top officials and nominees in the state. She got them all up to Grayson County for a big rally called the Red River Roll Call the other day. 1,000+ people showed up. So we talked to her about, number one, how she got Abbott up there. You know, they didn't like each other early on. Before she got into politics, but they are friends now, and she explains that here in the interview you'll hear in just a moment. But then secondly, can Republicans, this was a huge show of unity, no question, but can Republicans still get those Cornyn voters on board? And that's what is still out there, and some Republicans say, I don't know, that's what the challenge is gonna be.
There have been some fractures.
There have been some fractures, and have those healed, and she points out, you'll hear in a moment, Tallarico and Crockett are certainly a fracture too. The Democrats
Been fractures
to heal.
There too.
She's 100% correct. But let's start the episode here with Shelley Luther. Representative, good to see you here.
Good to see you. Thanks.
You put virtually every major Republican leader on stage in Sherman on Monday night on the same stage. The message was unity within the Republican Party. But what was the hardest phone call to make?
I don't know if it was hard, but who was the hardest to lure there? Is that what you're trying to say?
Who was it?
Well, honestly, we've been waiting to have Abbott come to our district for a long time, because everybody knows the governor and I didn't start off on the same ground, I would say. You know, we were at each other's throats a little bit during COVID. A lot of it on my part was just not understanding politics. And on his part, I don't know if I would want to be the leader of a state of over 30 million people with getting false news that we're hearing today with Fauci and all of these things, not really having the data. It would have been really hard to make decisions.
Well, was he the hardest to call, though? Was he the hardest to get on board?
You know, I will tell you, and I told the lieutenant governor this behind stage at the event. I'm like, you were kind of playing hard to get a little bit, and he chuckled.
Patrick was?
Yes.
Really?
Lieutenant. And he's like, well, to be honest with you, he had, and I think it was his anniversary or something, was close to that night, but he said, you know, you have too many speakers there, it's going to be boring. And I'm like, you don't understand, my husband and I are in the entertainment business. My husband's a full-time musician. I'm a singer. Like, we understand what it's going to take. And he's like, I don't think you're going to be able to pull this off. And I'm like, just trust me, it's going to be. And we had, my husband did a ton of production for it.
Yeah, we saw it, yeah.
Brought in this like 16-foot video screen.
Everyone had a playout video when they walked
out. My husband created most of those.
Wow.
We made it like a show, like the energy needed to be there, but that's where we bring our previous experience into the game. And so it was like no other rally done before. It was so fun.
Well, when you called the governor's office, though, did they bristle at this at all? Or they, you know, it's hard to get him scheduled. Everyone wants him in different parts of the state.
Yes.
He needs to fundraise. He keeps a busy calendar.
Yes.
But you got him to your district.
It took, I mean, we requested, and it took a couple of months to get the answer, which is because they need to see where he is on that day already, and it kind of loop in several events in the same area on the same day. So it's actually just, it fit in our schedule and fit in his. And then as soon as we got him, I started calling the others and saying, I asked the governor first if he would mind that I brought other speakers.
Sure.
He said no, he didn't mind. And I said, I think I'm gonna get, like, told him the list. He's like, you're not, their team's like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, oh, I like that. You know, I like when people tell me, you know, you can't do something. And so it gave me even more energy to do it.
Are you surprised you pull it off?
I am.
Yeah?
I don't say I was surprised. Looking back, I'm like, wow, we did that. But when it was happening, I was like, yeah, we're doing this.
You mentioned a moment ago that you and Governor Abbott were hardly allies 6 years ago before you got into politics. I think at one time during the COVID shutdowns, you called him a tyrant governor. But you guys are on the same page now. What changed between you? How did that relationship change?
So It's funny because the first time that I actually got to sit down with him was after I got into the legislature. So I was already a House member before the first time that we got to sit down and talk. And so it was him sitting across from me and then some of his staff sitting there. And I sit down and of course I have like this like, okay, I gotta kill this elephant in the room, you know? And he's just looking at me, very gracious, of course. And I said, so I'm not mad, are you mad? I'm not, and I'm the one that went to jail, right? So you're not, and you know, and we had a short conversation, but we were able to like kind of like talk it out and be like, I'm not emotional about any of this. I don't have any agenda except for to do what's best for Texas. And if you're on that same page and I am too, then let's work together and do it. And he's like, let's go. And we've never looked back since then. And we can joke about it. It's funny at this point.
Indeed so. Let's talk politics here for a moment. In 2018, the last midterm with President Trump, Democrats won 12 seats in the Texas House. We've watched the enthusiasm grow on the left right now. They need 14 seats to take control. How concerned are you that they might be able to do that this go-round?
I don't see them taking 14 seats, but of
course. What's realistic though? What's realistic?
I mean, I think there's about 5 seats that are pretty close. But I know those members in those districts are working their tails off. They are meeting, they're door knocking, they're doing all the things necessary to keep their seat and earn it.
And you feel confident they could keep it?
Absolutely, if they're doing the work. There's those of us that are in a little bit safer districts, yeah. More red,
sure.
And we are going out to help those people to make sure that they know we mean business and we're here to work for it. You don't have to give it to us, we'll earn it.
Let me ask you about the rally. Did you intentionally design the rally as a message to Republicans that everyone now needs to get on board? We're 100 days out. If there's any sore feelings from the primary, it's time to get over those. Was that the intent of the rally, to design that, to put everyone on the same page?
You know what, it wasn't at first. We did not tell, obviously, any of the politicians there what to say. They were given a time that they were, you say whatever you want, it's yeah. Your stage. Especially for myself, I didn't speak very much because we were in my district, those people hear me all the time. I just wanted to be there and give them an opportunity and let my constituents hear from Austin directly, and it was a big deal for everybody. But it definitely wasn't like, you need to speak about this, we're talking about unity, anything like that.
Okay. The biggest race on the ballot, Representative, is the U.S. Senate race. I've heard from Republicans, you may have as well, who say, listen, I voted for Cornyn, Paxson's just not my guy. I can't bring myself to vote for him. How concerned are you that they could cost Paxton the election?
I mean, anything's possible, especially in politics. But from what I'm hearing and with the reception that Ken Paxton got at my rally, he's doing great. They love Ken Paxton all over in North Texas. So,
but he needs to win the independent vote. I mean, clearly Republicans, most Republicans look like they're on his side, but winning the independent vote is what Republicans never really had trouble with because independents lean right in this state. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be harder for him this year than his predecessors?
I don't know if it's going to be harder, but I think that he can get a lot of the independent vote as well because he fought so hard for Texas and he's been in the news so much. How can you not love everything that his office has done? He has showed out and, you know, shown up for us for sure.
What do you make of these polls that show Tallarico barely ahead or ahead? You don't believe them? You don't buy it?
No, I think those are Democrat polls, and if anything, they're close, but Tallarico's not ahead right now.
Even the UT Austin poll back in April and May showed Tallarico ahead by 2 points. That's still within the margin of error. How close do you think this race is going to be?
I think it'll be close. It's going to be close for sure, and we can't take anything for granted. We can't say this is Texas, we stay red. We need to do the work necessary to make sure that the voters, we have more Republican voters, we just need to get them out. And for that statewide race, we need to make sure that Texans realize, even if you live in a red district like mine, every vote matters for these statewide candidates. You can't just sit at home because I'm safe. You've got to get out, and we've got to make the rural communities get out and vote.
Are you asking Cornyn voters to vote for Paxton or vote against James Tallarico?
Both. Both.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the stuff that Tallarico has said is just loony tunes to me. And yeah, is he a respectable guy? Is he nice when you talk to him and he seems normal? But all of the video clips of him, the words coming out of his mouth is the opposite of what Texas stands for. And I think that he's dug himself a little hole. There's too much footage of him saying crazy things.
And just to make sure I understand the finer point here too, is it, how confident are you that, that Cornyn voters are going to show up for Paxton? That was a bitter primary we all watched.
It definitely was, but I mean, it's still bitter for Tallarico and the Crockett. And so they're 100%. Going through the same thing. So they each have something to come over, you know, get over the primary. They still have some baggage from that, both of them. Yeah. So I'm saying if the Democrats didn't have any baggage, I probably would be concerned, but right now that baggage is louder than what I'm hearing on the other side.
So they both have baggage. Which person can overcome
right.
the baggage then?
That's right.
Single biggest threat to Republican turnout in November. What do you think it is?
Getting the rural Republicans out to vote, I think, because they feel so safe in their districts. We don't have the presidential election to boost them, and a lot of people only vote, you know, every 4 years, and we've got to not be lazy in these rural districts where I could sit at home and be lazy if I want to, if I was only concerned about my race. That's not going to work. We've got to get out and say, vote your values. We also need preachers and pastors and churches to tell people they should be voting. It's part of their duty as a citizen to get out and vote their values.
If you had to identify one issue that Republicans have to improve on over the next 90 days, what would that be?
I think Republicans need to meet people where they are and really see that, like, we last session, we were able to get in to the Republican legislature, people that are regular people like me. I consider myself just a regular person. I'm not an attorney. I'm not flooded with money. You know, I come from a humble beginning, you know, all of these things. And I really relate well with people. And we need people to see that a lot of the GOP, the Republican Party in the Texas House and Senate is like that now too. We can relate to you. We understand when gas is too expensive, that hurts us too. And a lot of the things that they're feeling hurts us too. And we understand and we want to do something about it.
Some of these things are outside Republican control though. Well, let me rephrase that. Some of these things are outside Texas control with inflation, gas prices, the war in Iran. I mean, these could dog Republican races, couldn't they? These issues?
They can. They can do it. And it's not like the state is doing anything to make, you know, it's like not much that we can do. And a lot of people want us to do something like right this minute when we only meet every other year. And a lot of people are wanting like the governor to call a moratorium on things. And it's that's not in his authority. I asked. I asked his office.
And about data centers and things like that?
All of the things like that. Sure. They're like, call a moratorium, but he's only able to do those king-like powers during an emergency, which is how I, you know, ended up in so much trouble during COVID.
During the emergency.
Yes.
A couple last questions here too. What are you personally going to be doing over the next 96 days?
Well, first of all, I take them one day at a time.
Yeah?
I'll tell you, one day at a time. And I'm going to make sure that people are registered to vote. I'm going to be out communicating with my constituents, which I do anyway. Encouraging my colleagues to get out of their house and be good representation of our party, mm-hmm. and getting out the vote to make sure we have the votes. We just need to make sure people show up day one. We want them to vote on the first day of early voting.
Have you worked this hard in the past? I mean, it seems like everyone's really, really working hard right now. I know people have worked hard in the past, but this seems different this cycle, is it?
It's different, but I've worked this hard. It's just part of me and who I am. My husband and I have knocked thousands of doors, up to 10,000 doors in a legislative session, and lost the race.
So I remember that race. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're not afraid of hard work, but now that we have a few win under our belt, and have a little bit more, I don't know what, I don't want to say authority, that's not the word, but like people are listening
influence.
To what we have. Influence,
sure.
That's a good word. A little bit more influence is a little bit easier, which means we can do even more work if we stay hardworking.
Your role in the Republican Party of Texas right now, what do you think that is? You just pulled off this huge show, the Red River Roll Call. What is your role moving forward?
I think it's anything I need to be. Anything that I need to be to make sure that we keep Texas, Texas. That's what I'll do.
Do you have aspirations for higher office?
I do what God tells me I need to do. And right now I'm needed right where I am, doing exactly what I'm doing.
Representative, good to see you. Thanks for the time.
Thank you very much.
All right, so Shelley Luther there, you know, clearly confident. She says it's going to be close, a close race at the top of the ticket with Paxton Tallarico, but she feels confident that Republicans can pull this off. And they have for 30-something years. The last Democrat to represent Texas in the U.S. Senate was 1993.
Well, you know, we've also heard confidence, though, from Democrats, and I say that. We've heard that from them, like hopeful confidence, in past elections mm-hmm. before this one. This one, the tone has changed some, though. There's that hopeful confidence, but I would highlight the word confidence a little bit more than what we've seen or heard from Democrats in the past. I think they're feeling a little bit bullish here in Texas, which I don't think they always do going into these cycles.
They don't always, and is that, should they have that confidence? I don't know. I mean, they have a strong candidate at the top of the ticket, no question. Mm-hmm. Can Tallarico swing those extra voters in to give Democrats a shot at maybe taking control of the Texas House of Representatives?
And can they capitalize on this feeling that, you know, could be going on around this state, but certainly has been going on in the country, this sort of anti-incumbency feeling? And it targets members of both parties, but, you know, the fact is that, you know, the party in charge here in Texas, which has been in charge for decades, as you mentioned, is Republicans. Mm-hmm. Usually the incumbency is a good thing. It helps you out. But when you start to get this, you know, reverse effect where people have had it with the people in power, regardless of, you know, which party they are, you have some issues. And now you're facing a headwind where usually it's a tailwind.
And some Republicans have said that they expect a reckoning in the party. Mm. What does that mean? Mm. Does that mean someone's going to lose? Does that mean there's just going to be, you know, the Cornyn side and the Paxton side, you know, figuring this out among themselves? I don't know what that's going to mean.
Or could it mean that you have Democrats doing very, very well in the House of Representatives here in Texas, which they think they're going to?
They do think they're going to. So Christina Morales, I mentioned her in the beginning of the episode here. She is a Democrat from Houston. We reached her on the road in the Rio Grande Valley down in South Texas. She's down there.
Huge place.
Popular place.
Very important.
And it's important specifically because we've talked about this before on Yolitics. Latinos down there are conservative Democrats, essentially. Mm-hmm. And they swung away from Democrats and reelected Donald Trump.
In huge numbers.
In 2024. And now there's evidence they're swinging back.
That pendulum at the bottom of the state, man.
Towards Democrats.
Pretty chaotic.
So Morales, Representative Morales is there. We got her on the phone, and she too seems confident.
Representative, thank you for being here. We are less than 100 days from the November election. Lots of momentum right now. But Democrats have said for a long time that Texas is in play. What evidence is there this year besides enthusiasm?
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you for having me. And I am excited that I'm the chair of the House Democratic Campaign Committee. So I'm watching all of this happen like in real time, boots on the ground. And Texas is in play. We noticed that during the primary election when more Democrats came out in many of the districts that we're running in than Republicans. So people are excited. And when our candidates are knocking on the door, they feel the frustration with the leadership, the Republican leadership in Texas right now, and they are ready for change.
Let's talk specific seats here. Democrats are targeting a number of Republicans in the Texas House. Now that we're inside of 100 days here, some of these races are coming into focus, but in which seats do you think Democrats have the best shot right now?
Definitely in South Texas. I'm currently in the RGB right now. South Texas, you know, was duped by the Trump administration and Republicans when it comes to immigration policy. And so those folks are definitely ready for change. We also have in the Dallas area, we have some moderate Republicans who are also gaining frustration from their constituency because, listen, they still voted for these crazy immigration laws and they voted against their public schools. Let's not forget that. Every Republican who's on the ballot, who's an incumbent, has a record of voting against our public schools and funneling billions of dollars to private schools. So many of our candidates are teachers and they are stepping up and running for office because they are angry about how our public schools are being treated right now. We need to better fund them.
Well, let me ask you about that. I'll split this up into the Rio Grande Valley and the Dallas races too. But voters in the Rio Grande Valley, those Latino voters, they're the ones that were concerned about immigration. They're the ones that in 2024 voted for Republicans and for President Trump. What message is working there now for Democrats that wasn't working 2 years ago?
They did not realize, I did, because I fought against SB4 a couple of sessions back, but what our friends and neighbors in the RGV did not realize was the inhumane practices that were going to be happening. And right near my district in Houston, Texas, we saw the murder of a man who was simply going to work that morning, running his small business, employing other people in the community. And that's what they do here as well. Listen, we're all for criminals being arrested and being dealt with, but they believed that criminal immigrants were going to be scooped up and removed from the country. And that's not what happened at all. What happened was regular folk like Mr. Lorenzo Salgado Araujo were picked up on their way to work in the morning, had no criminal history, tried to do a smear campaign and make it sound like he was a drug dealer, like he tried to run over the ICE agents, which we found not to be true. And so this is very alarming to them now. And I think they're back on track, understanding that the Democratic Party has always stood with them and we are going to fight for immigrants' rights.
Well, let me ask about the Dallas area races, because Democrats have long targeted Morgan Meyer and Angie Chin Button in Dallas. But these races are always very close, but Representative Button and Representative Meyer always end up winning. Democrats can't crack those. Why do you think this year might be different?
Listen, we're going to point out, and they're nice people. I work with them. But the reality is that they voted for these cruel and inhumane practices that we see going on with ICE. But what's really important to those communities is the public schools. And they voted against public schools. And we cannot stand for that. And that's what we're finding with our candidates who are running in those areas, that people are frustrated. And they're worried about the economy too. And when you are voting for these policies and supporting people like Elon Musk, we realize now that this is hurting our checkbook and people are not going to stand for it. And that's why we have some amazing candidates running in these areas. And I think they're going to pull it off. Listen, our mission is to flip the Texas House. That's what the goal is. And that's what we're working towards.
And to do that, Democrats would need to win 14 seats. I mean, that's a lofty goal. Last time the Democrats won that many or close to that many was 12 seats back in 2018.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up, because in 2018, we did not have the infrastructure that we have now. And we were able to flip 12 seats. One of my colleagues from the Dallas area, you know, she was knocking on every door because she didn't know how to use van and make sure that she was knocking on Democrat voter doors. But we have the infrastructure now in place. I've been traveling around the state since January, making sure our candidates have what they need, the training that they need, that we're setting up block walks, that we're doing phone banks, and that we're doing call time. So things are different this time around. And when we have some amazing candidates at the top of the ticket, listen, I think this is the year, and this is the best opportunity to pull it off in a second Trump midterm.
Winning 14 seats to get the majority, that is a lofty goal. What's realistic, do you think?
I think that's realistic. Listen, I'm an optimistic person, and I get energized when I talk to our candidates, and I think we're going to see a lot of surprises. We're aligned with the DLCC, which is the national organization, just like the one I'm the chair of, and they've already put out their list of their top tier candidates. There's about 13 on that list. So the national organization is already investing in Texas. And so, hey, we just got a few more seats to go and we're going to do it.
Affordability seems like it has emerged as the number one issue for Texas voters this fall. Give me at least two things that Democrats would do to make this state more affordable.
Listen, we are going to prioritize people over billionaires. And we've seen that here recently with data centers and, you know, Elon Musk getting every tax break known to man. And why do the Republicans continue to support billionaires and billionaire companies? It's because that's where they get their campaign donations from. So our candidates are boots on the ground, powered by people. I mean, most of them have a team of volunteers who are going to go out and get their votes. And these are real people who are on the ground who understand that the grocery bills are too high, that gas prices are too high, that it is not affordable to live. People can barely pay their rent. I think the Republicans forget that there are renters in Texas because they talk about property tax reform, and that only helps people who own their own home. But we look out for everyone. We do want to help our seniors who their biggest asset is their home and they only have one of them. We're thinking about those people who have to live in an apartment because that's their only choice right now. And those are students. Those are people who are building their careers. And those are the people that we are going to be focused on. And that's who we're talking to at the door. And that's how we're going to get across the finish line and flip the Texas House.
But ending tax breaks is one thing. What else are Democrats talking about that they can do to make Texas more affordable if voters decide to cast their ballots for them?
Let's also talk about helping our small businesses. We've been so focused on corporate billionaires, and we haven't thought enough about our small businesses. It is so much harder these days to be an entrepreneur. I'm a small business owner myself, and my insurance rates are killing me. I have a brick and mortar, so the property taxes are killing me. But yet I see Elon Musk get all kinds of tax breaks. So we need to get back to the people of Texas who elect us and make sure that we're making our businesses more affordable to run, that we haven't done anything about oil and gas in a long, long time. And listen, many of our constituents work in those industries. Yeah. So we want a common sense approach that makes it fair for everybody and not just rewarding those who are at the very top in the 1%. So let's make sure that we're thinking about our people who work paycheck to paycheck. Those are the people that we're talking to, and those are the people that we're gonna support moving forward as we win the House and we start to pass policies that actually help working Texans.
Is there anything else specific you're hearing from constituents and people across the state as you're traveling, besides ending tax breaks and maybe addressing the outrageous insurance rates in the state?
Well, you know, there are...
As far as affordability goes, is what I was talking about.
Yes. I mean, well, affordability has been the number one issue at the door. But also the Republican primary leaves sometimes these right wing Republicans that really don't appeal to anybody. But we have one of our candidates reached out to me because she said, I really don't know what to do about an insurrectionist who is out there with my campaign sign telling people to vote for me. And just think about that for a minute, that a person who was in Washington, D.C. on January 6th is out there supporting one of our Democratic candidates. That is the change that people want to see. They are tired of billionaires getting all the tax breaks. They are tired of these inhumane practices that are happening in our communities. Some of these communities have never seen police officers and unmarked vehicles driving through their communities, and they're afraid. They're like, this is not really keeping us safe. And when you have those, and I'm here in the RGB, and we just talked about it. When you have those kind of people terrorizing our community, it drives up costs because you can't find people to fill those jobs where they're willing to take entry level pay. So that is going to impact our economy. People are thinking twice about driving to their vacation destination and doing something that's a little closer to home. That's when you know that this is impacting our communities. And that's what we're seeing at the door. And that's how we know we're going to win.
A couple last questions here for you. Republicans again pledged to address property taxes in a number of ways. Governor Abbott wants to eliminate the school portion of property taxes altogether. What's the plan from Democrats?
We put a plan forward a couple of sessions ago that would include renters and not focus so much on the people who have two and three properties and these corporations who have these big plots of land. What ends up happening is everybody's taxed the same. And why should a person who just has their one big asset, which is their home, have the same tax rate as billionaires? There's no reason for it. And I know that we keep raising the exemption, but guess what? That ends up hurting our cities too. We have removed local control. So a lot of our local entities are really frustrated that we're not giving them any room to make sure that they're providing for their communities. So there's a lot to be fixed. And
but in the same sense, sorry for interrupting, property taxes are on a trajectory that are unsustainable in this state, just like insurance rates are too. Do Democrats have a plan to arrest that rise?
Listen, our plan right now is to win, and we are making sure that we're fielding a candidate in every House seat for the very first time since the 70s. We have a candidate running in every Texas House seat. And with that, we're going to bring people who really understand how we can better help our communities that do need relief from property taxes. Right now, that really isn't the focus. It's just a smoke and mirrors game that we see from the Republicans, and to remove property taxes completely. And you know, when they say we don't want any more property taxes, even Republicans come up and say, that sounds crazy, because it does. We are tired of crazy policy that doesn't help anybody. We want to help realistic people have realistic property tax reform, where we're thinking about renters, we're thinking about our small businesses, and we're thinking about the people who only have that one asset, which is their home, and not the people who can afford to live in 15 houses and have six different addresses to vote from, like the people on the other side of the aisle. That's not what we're about, and we're going to bring forward policy that helps working Texans.
Let me ask you this last question here, too. Governor Abbott is pledging to spend tens of millions of dollars from his own campaign account to turn Harris County red. What do you expect that to look like, in the next 3 months, less than 100 days until the election?
Well, let me just say this, that Harris County cannot be bought. He has had us as a target ever since we turned blue, and we are going to stay blue. Our candidates aren't going to have that kind of money to contend. They can't raise that kind of money. But what they can do is they can be powered by volunteers and people, because the revolution will not be paid for. It is by the people, for the people, and powered by the people. So to him, we say, spend all your money, but people know what's really going on, and we are hearing it at the door. We will outblock any of our candidates. We're going to work hard to raise the money that we need to make sure that we have literature and signs and t-shirts, and we're going to get there. Our goal is to flip the Texas House of Representatives, and that's what we're going to do.
Representative Morales, thank you for the time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.